Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Market Bites. I'm Sam.
And I'm Josh.
And we're here to break down three of the hottest financial events that happened this week, so you can keep your finger on the pulse on your way to work, at the gym, wherever and whenever you have time to get updated.
Please remember that this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only. Stay tuned for additional disclosures at the end of today's episode.
So, are you ready?
Here we go.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode. I'm joined by Josh Gilbert and Neza Malk. Josh, how are you?
I'm very well, Sam. I'm very well. How are you? Did you have a good Easter?
Yeah, very good. Very good. It's always good to have a four-day weekend. Very underrated. Yes. Let's bring them back more often, I say. Neza, also, how are you?
Oh, I'm also well, but we only had 3-day weekend, which is still not that bad. And the clocks changed, so it's a bit confusing right now, but everything's good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, I think it's a 2 or 3 week period where for us in the UK, the clocks obviously change in America and the cash open, which is usually 2:30, becomes 1:30. And it's just confusing for a long time. I hate it, but we're back to some sort of normality now. Josh, you're coming to the end of summer. How's the weather looking?
Yeah, well, I just was listening to the news just before we jumped on, actually, and we're about to get between 200 and 300 mils of rain over the next week or so, which is quite a big amount of rain. So yeah, it was a bit fresh today. I mean, I say fresh, I'm not going to be over the top. It was like 15 to 20 degrees, but it was when you're coming out of that Australian summer, it's a big change. But yeah, the rain is coming. So yeah, those summer nights are ending.
Well, that's it, Neza. You and I, we've beaten the worst of the winter weather. Spring is on the horizon. Yeah, markets finally are pretty much at all time highs. Everyone seems to be happy at the moment. We're going to discuss Tesla deliveries, obviously in the news last couple of days. We'll also talk about gold, one of those markets that is at an all time high. And we're also going to talk about Levi's. How does that sound, Josh?
Yep, good to me. Yeah, I think, you know, Tesla is really that one. I think it's probably grabbed the headlines in the last sort of day or so. One of the worst performers on the S&P 500, just looking today, I think it's the second worst performer on the S&P 500. So to put Tesla as the second worst performer out of 500 stocks is pretty poor, down 33%. And it's happening because the market continues to sort of have questions over EV demand. Obviously, a lot of competition in China, and we're also seeing production bottlenecks as well. And they reported vehicle deliveries earlier this week. That's why they're in the news, and they're in the news because unfortunately it wasn't very pretty. So that's why I'm going to have a talk about Tesla.
Awesome. I will talk about gold. Well, it's not that some fancy cryptocurrency or a tech giant. It has just hit a new all-time high. And now 1 ounce of gold is now worth just a bit over or just a bit under $2,300. It's actually surged by more than 38% from its last low point back in 2022 and around 9% in March, which was its biggest increase since July in 2020.
Yeah, it's been on a remarkable run. Incredible. Earnings are almost done and we're almost at the new sort of round of them. But Levi's have caught my attention. They're reporting today or tonight, depending where you are in the world. I'm interested for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm in the market for a new pair of jeans. And two, they're pretty much bang in the middle of their all-time range between their high, which they had a couple of years ago, and the low. That low coming around $9, the high around 30, and we're trading give or take around 2019. So pretty much bang in the middle there. So I feel like it's quite an important time, quite an important earnings report. But as I said, earnings are sort of fading out before we get into the next round. So Josh, let's get started then. Tesla deliveries. For those that don't know, this is a figure that is released separately to the earnings and tells us how many vehicles Tesla delivered in the first quarter of the year. You mentioned it wasn't pretty, but how bad was it?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. pretty bad. They missed Wall Street estimates, which, okay, yeah, you know, that happens. We see that quite a lot, but they missed those estimates by the biggest margin ever. That's data going back to sort of 2007. So a really, really big miss. Fell by 8.5% from the same period last year. So they delivered 386,000 vehicles in Q1, which, you know, is a pretty good number. But that was actually the lowest quarterly delivery number since 2022. So a big change. And maybe for some context to that, the market expects them to deliver 490,000 vehicles next quarter. That's going to change significantly. You know, at the moment that's sat at 490,000 when I had a look today, but that's going to change. That's going to be closer to sort of probably 430,000 vehicles I would expect for the next quarter, given how poor this number was. And there is a huge difference there. And I think ultimately this is just pouring more fuel on the fire for Tesla at a time when they could have really done with some good news. And the reason why they sort of missed that number, had some disruptions at its plant in Berlin. So it coming from production issues. We've obviously got a fierce competition coming through in China as well. The likes of sort of BYD, NIO, you know, a lot more sort of traditional manufacturers coming to the EV sort of party. And obviously China continues to be a key market for Tesla. But also the sort of the general environment that we have right now for consumers, which is, you know, ultimately still inflation that is pretty high. You've also got interest rates that are at decade highs in the US, where we're sort of higher than sort of 5%, and that takes its toll. And therefore, you know, that has put those luxury vehicles that Tesla sell, which they ultimately are, they're not sort of very, you know, bottom line consumer friendly. They're sort of top end luxury. If you see someone driving a Tesla, you usually think they're pretty well off, and that is because they are in that top end, and that has put their cars out of reach for many. And especially if you're, you know, going to be financing a car as well, which many people do with those interest rates, it's going to cost you a lot more money to take out a pretty substantial finance package for that car as well. But even despite all of that, you know, Tesla was expected to see growth year over year. So the fact that, you know, we have got this number, it is going to be a huge disappointment for investors. And that was reflected yesterday. Shares were down another sort of 4.5%. So it's a lot of pain right now to sort of start the year. But I think what's really important is that I think this is the real sign that we are actually getting of demand starting to crack. A lot of question marks over demand around EVs at the start of this year, at the end of last year. But I think this is really the first sign for me where it's actually sort of coming through in the numbers. And I think that is a bit of a worry for investors. But I also think this might be a bit of a wake-up call for Elon Musk as well.
So this really wasn't the best news, but do you think that this story is across all EV industry, or it is a Tesla-specific problem?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think there's certainly weakness across the sort of the EV industry more broadly. And I think that speaks to sort of the general weakness that we are seeing maybe in EV demand. So yeah, I think that's maybe one positive. I think Tesla investors can sort of take away, you know, Tesla is the most owned retail stock by eToro investors. It's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast, you know, asking the question, okay, is the Tesla story over? Well, maybe not. Maybe we're just sort of seeing really what is a difficult time for broadly EV manufacturers, because we also had BYD, which is the sort of the large Chinese manufacturer who actually leapfrogged Tesla in Q4 2023 to become the best-selling EV manufacturer in the world. They also saw a huge drop in electric vehicles in Q1 as well. And they actually delivered less EVs than Tesla. So they actually gave Tesla back the crown of the top selling EV manufacturer, which is maybe a small bright spot and does show that this isn't, you know, Tesla specific, and maybe is a, you know, actually something that we've got to worry about across the industry. Look at a few other names. Rivian actually delivered more vehicles than expected, but of course, it's a much lower level. We're talking about 13,500 vehicles. When we're talking about Tesla and BYD, we're talking 300,000. We've got Ford that are reporting tonight in the US their sort of delivery. So that's going to be Wednesday. So again, still a few numbers sort of coming out, but I think fair to say probably not EV specific. If we maybe come away from being less EV specific and looking at sort of total deliveries for some other manufacturers, we had Toyota. They actually saw deliveries grow by 20% in Q1. And sort of coming back to the point that I was making earlier and why I think that's relevant is because I think that underscores the demand for affordability from consumers. You know, when we think about maybe a Toyota compared to a Tesla, it's a much less premium vehicle. It's a much more affordable sort of product. And as I say, EVs aren't cheap. And I think if we then put in, the lack of maybe charging infrastructure that is, you know, in most places still in Australia, we're obviously a massive country, still not easy to sort of rock up somewhere and put your vehicle on charge. And also it's not the most convenient either. If you're going on a long journey, do you really want to pull over and charge your car up for an hour, or do you want to just sort of put it in the pump and be 10 minutes and off you go again? And then I think that's making it really difficult to sort of draw consumers to the product for now as well. And then on back to sort of EV specifically, we are still seeing growth from a year ago. But we are starting to see a slowdown in that growth. And then on the other side of that, we are actually seeing hybrid vehicles sell quite well, which is actually, you know, a bit of both, right? We've got, you know, good fuel economy, stickier prices that are closer to probably, those sort of fuel powered cars, and they are growing. So I think that's really important, is that you're still sticking to that fuel, but obviously it's got sort of better economy. They're growing at a pretty fast rate. So yeah, look, bottom line, Tesla's going through a really, really tough period. Margins are down after price cuts, which was supposed to drive volumes, which it did for a bit. Now we have volumes falling. We are quite clearly in what is a lithium winter, possibly an EV winter at the moment as well. And I think that might continue until we do get closer to rate cuts. And we've seen in the last few days, last week or so, rate cuts have been pushed back even further again from the Fed. And I feel like this does feel like a really significant moment in this sort of Tesla story for sort of Musk, really, because I think he's got a big job now to either sort of turn this around and sort of try and reverse what is a pretty ugly performance in Q1. And if he can't, then there might be some darker days ahead. And I think that could really disrupt what is this sort of long-term Tesla narrative, which is the world's biggest EV manufacturer that is really showing no signs of slowing down. But we are seeing that now. So I think Musk has got a big job on his hands over the next couple of months to see if he can turn this around.
That is very, very true. I'm just having a look at the S&P 500 as of the close of play on the 2nd of April. Some of the companies: Meta up 40%, Nvidia up 80%, Amazon 18%, Berkshire Hathaway 17%, JP Morgan 16%, Exxon 19%, Disney in the 30s, Eli Lilly 31% up, Google 10%, Oracle 18%, Tesla down 33%, as you mentioned there, Josh. But for some people, they might be eyeing that up and saying there's a bit of value around these lows. We haven't been here for a while. Therefore, the upside is going to be a little bit more exciting. Let us know if you are one of those people or you actually think there's more downside to come. It's always an interesting market, always a hotly debated one as well. So let us know how you're feeling about it. One market that isn't down 32-33% for the year is gold, Neja. What's the buzz around it? What's contributed to this recent rise?
Actually, as I said, gold rose by around 9% in March. So yeah, it is rising. And as you know, gold has always been a symbol of wealth and power for centuries. But it's not just about this shiny, pretty metal. It is also used in all sorts of industries like medicine and electronics. And the most importantly, it's known as safe haven asset because of its historical maintenance of value over time. So current rise might seem surprising to some. However, new all-time high can be explained by a few different scenarios that could affect demand for gold. First, if interest rates and gold prices often move inversely, which means that when interest rates fall, gold becomes more attractive compared to fixed income assets like bonds. So this scenario is likely one of the reasons driving up demand for gold, if we take in consideration that markets still expect that central banks could start with interest rates cuts this year. On the other hand, investors might see protection in gold from ongoing geopolitical tensions and upcoming US presidential elections and presidential elections that will take place in November. So gold might be seen as a safer bet compared to other assets during these uncertain times. However, we have to also take a look outside the US. We see that some major economies are currently not performing as well as the US. Particularly, private investors in China are seeking stability in gold due to weak performance of their market and problems in their real estate sector. Besides private investors in China, China also stands out a significant driver of central bank purchases of gold, according to data from World Gold Council. So overall, surge in gold prices can be attributed to all of these factors explained. The main reason behind them is always demand for gold because of its ability to retain its value no matter what is happening in the world.
Yeah, and it is really interesting to always sort of look at the demographic, I think, of investors that buy and own gold. And I think, Sam, you did the rib last week with Ben, and in there, you might not have spoke about it on the podcast, but maybe for those that are interested, go and sort of check out the rib online. And it sort of has a look at what investors of a certain age are investing in, and the difference in demographic between the sort of the younger investors that are heavily skewed to sort of crypto and those older investors that are heavily skewed on the opposite to sort of gold, I think just sort of speaks to maybe the risk profile of sort of the generation, our generation who grew up with sort of, you know, meme stocks and crypto and sort of being maybe a bit more sort of riskier to sort of investments. But I think seeing what we've seen from gold over sort of the last year or so just shows that it does quite clearly have a place in investment portfolios. So I think the next question is, what is next for gold? And do we see this sort of trend continuing, Neza?
Well, here we can't be sure what will happen, but we can take in consideration few possibilities. If inflation drops, as we are hoping for, central banks might lower interest rates as expected, and we might see lower currencies and investors shifting from bonds. As a result, the price of gold could continue this upward trend. But here, yeah, nothing is for sure. Now, the other possibility is that if central banks struggle to control inflation, they might adopt this higher for longer stance. And in this case, we could see stronger currencies and more demand for bonds and other fixed income assets compared to gold. However, it's important to remember that monetary policy is just one of many factors that might influence demand for gold and its price movements. In this case, we didn't take in consideration any political changes in the world or central banks buying more gold. So, yeah. We will see, and I will definitely keep an eye on it.
Question is, Neza, is gold in your portfolio?
In my portfolio? No, it's not.
Sam?
Do you know what? I was just thinking while Neza was talking, and everything she was saying, it completely makes sense why gold is higher. And if you go back to January and you name everything that's coming out this year, you say, well, gold should do better this year. It should be up based off all of that. But I haven't invested in it. And it goes back almost to what you're saying, Josh, about the retail investor B and the demographics. And it's interesting. But then someone could sit here and say, well, and Josh, I don't know whether you've got it in. You can answer in a moment. But it's like you two or you three haven't invested gold, even though you knew it was going to go up. You're idiots.
Yeah, I think for me, it was, I think I really started looking at gold maybe after we sort of came out of COVID, and you know, those that sort of maybe slightly bubble type thing, if you had sort of really started to sort of seep away. And I think maybe that was that focus on maybe a bit of protection, and that then obviously came 2022, which was, you know, probably not a bad place to sort of park a bit of cash. But look, I'm a young investor, and it's just too boring for me to have in my portfolio. I just can't do it. It's just yes, we might be up 25%, but also I can own Bitcoin as well. So that's the balance for me. And it's all about having a profile or a portfolio that suits your risk appetite. But for me, I struggle to have it in. Maybe in sort of 25 years time, 30 years time, I'm going to be begging to have it in the portfolio. Maybe I would have sold most of my Bitcoin by then, but let's see. In other news, something that does last a long time, similar to gold, is a pair of Levi's. I bought a pair of Levi's shorts and I was wearing them around at the weekend. I was thinking to myself, these have lasted me a very, very long time. And they just haven't faded. They're a pair of black shorts. Bearing in mind, I live in Australia, a lot of sun. They just haven't faded. They're still black. They're still brilliant. They still work. And that is why shares have probably done so well in the last year. And Sam, reporting earnings this week, what are you keeping an eye on? As I said, year-to-date performance is strong. Shares up 25%. But five-year performance, maybe not as good, down about 6%. What are we thinking on earnings this week?
Yeah, I mean, Levi's are the goats, aren't they? The jeans you want. I mean, I actually don't have a pair right now, but as I said, I'm in the market for a pair of jeans at the moment. I've just been wearing some called Weekday, which were recommended to me, which are good, just not quite Levi's. But yeah, it's currently trading bang in the middle of its range. So it IPO'd probably just over about 5 years ago now, hence why it's just down a little bit since then, but up nicely from the lows. I think technical traders will be keeping a very close eye on the highs that we had back in 2022 from April and June, just for a guide of sentiment. You know, when the earnings report comes out, okay, wait, let it settle a bit, and then do we trade above there? If we do, I would imagine the sentiment is pretty bullish and we can start trading towards $24. However, if we do close below those April and June highs and move back down towards $18, I don't think that would be all too surprising. So it seems very, very finely set, pretty much bang in the middle of that range. Another thing to mention just before getting into the report is that it has been on fire recently. I mean, other than Tuesday's trade, which was the 2nd of April, where there was weak quarter one guidance for PVH. Now, PVH, you know, you're thinking Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein. So they had bad quarter one guidance, and that dragged the stock down. But it's had many up weeks in a row, a very strong week last week as well, over 60% higher from its September 2023 low. So the reason I'm mentioning this is for us to continue higher, we need a really good report. You know, if we have a move like this and it's a bad report, well, the proof is no longer in the pudding, so to speak. So keep a watch on that. I think it needs to come in really good for us to continue to push higher immediately. But if it's in line or not too good, then I think you see some sharp price action to the downside, and keep an eye obviously on $18 as a potential support level. Now, for the report, the company stands about 8 billion market cap. It might be a little bit lower than that after yesterday's trade. Quarterly EPS expected of 0.21 and revenue expected of 1.5 billion. The PE ratio is around 31, which is higher than quite a lot of its competitors or industry related companies. There is an argument, and I was just having a look at everything yesterday, to say it's relatively fair value at the moment, which again puts a little bit more importance on this report for me. You know, good when we push on, fine, but bad or in line and we move lower. Sometimes you can get a report where if it comes in line, it can go up because there's less bad news now if it's been on a downtrend, but we've been on a significant uptrend, we've been pushing higher. I think it needs to be good for us to immediately push on. Revenue has been trending higher over the last three quarters, expected to dip a little bit. Debt has been pretty consistent. Cash has crept up the last couple of quarters as well. So things may be heading in the right direction, but again, an important report. Just having a look at some of those competitors. I mentioned PVH, and we'll also look at Columbia. If we just go back to the last 6 months, Levi and PVH both up 42%, Columbia up 10% year to date. Levi's is the only one that is up though. 1 year performance, Levi's just creeping positive, PVH up 20%. Columbia down 13%. So it's actually quite volatile when you look at it over the last sort of few months. However, all three of them currently down on a 5-year performance. So yeah, interesting time, interesting report, one to, I think, definitely keep an eye on.
Thanks for the update, Sam. I forgot to mention earlier, I have 3 pairs of Levi's and they are just the same as they were on the day that I bought them. And that was a few years ago already. So yeah, I love the brand. And they often say that we should invest somewhere in the brands that we know that we use on a daily basis. So what do you think that someone who is interested in fashion could also consider besides Levi's?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think it is a great way for people to start investing in individual stocks. For example, I know, you know, people, when they first get into investing, there's not too much wrong with choosing a few ETFs and putting them in every month, dollar cost averaging in. But if you do want to take it a little bit more seriously and go down that individual stock route, yeah, investing in your passion, your niche is not a bad way to go about it. And most people will have a niche, you know, whether that be fashion, whether that be sport, whether that be cinema, whether it be whatever, there's always going to be some companies that are related to that. So yeah, let's say it was fashion, you're already going to know some brands that are public companies, you're going to know retailers, e-commerce platforms, and then you can start thinking about the supply chain and manufacturing companies behind these big fashion brands as well. So you've already got a decent selection of companies. Of course, there's no guarantee every company you know is going to be a good one, but it's a starting base that maybe gives you a bit of an advantage over just the average investor who doesn't know that. So look, I'm by no means a fashionista, as I sit here with a blue Nike jacket and a navy blue eToro hat. It's not exactly Gucci, is it? Everything that I'm wearing. But you're going to know these brands, as I said, and you could be thinking of, you know, if it was me, I'd be thinking of Ralph Lauren, your LVMHs, your Levi Strauss's, for example, Hermes, Nike, Dior. You can start thinking of these companies and then, you know, seeing which ones maybe interest you a little bit more. Retailers, Amazon, eBay, Alibaba immediately jumped out to me. And then I could look into those a little bit more, compare them, and then see maybe which companies I like the look of in the medium to longer term. And of course, you could be diversified within those fields as well. The point being, if you have a niche, you're already one step ahead of the average investor. And I was having some food on Monday with a few mates. And look, my niche is sport, you know, maybe football if I wanted to go down into it a little bit more. And I could easily name loads of companies that are related to that. But within sport, I was speaking with a friend who's really into their running. And they got a pair of these On running shoes. And I'm seeing more and more people wear these. And, you know, this is someone who would only have worn Nike running trainers before and now would never pick them up again because these shoes from On are so good. More people wearing them, maybe that would be a company that I would look into. If I'm starting to see more people wear it, you know, maybe that is heading in the right direction. And there's a reason behind it, of course, no guarantee. Hence why, you know, capital allocation, doing that rightly and diversification is important. But yeah, if you've got a niche, chances are there's something out there for you.
Yeah, I think it just comes back to that very basic principle in investing. You know, Peter Lynch talks about it in his book on The One Up on Wall Street. You know, some of his best investment ideas coming from his wife, simply just coming back from the supermarket, buying things, and just simply saying that if there's a line or a queue outside a shop, probably a good reason to maybe own that company. And you make a good point, Sam. Like when I first got here in Australia, there was a brand called Afterpay, which ended up being bought by Square, or formerly known as Block now. And essentially it was the buy now, pay later. But Australia was slightly ahead. I think in Europe now there's your Klarna's and maybe a few other brands. But go back sort of 4 or 5 years, and it was sort of, I think when I left the UK, you wouldn't have even thought about it, but what was this sort of product? And you see it pop up in all the stores, and I was hearing friends saying, oh, I just bought something down at the shop. I bought it in 4 payments, interest free. That's what a fantastic product. Everyone's sort of going to use that. And obviously shares went on to do really well and ended up getting buying out. So I think sometimes people are going to overcomplicate in investing as well. And also, if you just want to simplify, you want to get involved in fashion, have a look at our smart portfolios. You've got that sort of fashion portfolio on eToro, which is a smart portfolio. It has over 35 different fashion stocks. Performance speaks for itself. 12.5% this year, 25.5% last year. Just one down year since 2019. So sometimes even investing in what you know can be very rewarding as well.
Yeah, that's a good point of view. And it also might be easier to understand their business model when you actually see the product, you use it yourself, your friends use it, you got all the reviews together. So it's easier to make a research, or you already know who are their main competitors. And yeah, if you are interested in any specific niche, there are smart portfolios that cover companies in that niche. And if you take a look at them, you might find some companies that you already know, and some it might be a good thing to consider.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. One thing as well that I think is really underrated, and from I've just been listening, not reading, to The Shoe Dog by Phil Knight about his journey with Nike, and the importance of traveling, you know, experiencing different cultures. The amount of investment ideas you can get from doing this is incredible, I reckon. You know, if you were to spend a few months just traveling the world, you'd probably come back a better investor. As long as you have a good starting base, I think you'd come back a lot more clued up about maybe the next areas that would be ready to boom. Look, we'll wrap
have
it
you
up
finished
there.
The book?
Go on. No, it's taken me about 10 months to get through.
That's brilliant.
But it is good, isn't it? It's it shocks me how slow it started at the beginning and how close they were to it not working, and that's what I like the most about it, is that you just didn't give up. Just do it, I guess, is where that sort of catchphrase comes from. But you enjoyed it, did you, Josh?
Yeah, brilliant. I think I read it in about 5 days. and that doesn't happen very often with me and books. By far the best book I've ever read. Obviously, you know, I think I probably have a bit more of a personal connection to it, just because, you know, sports and the brand. I absolutely love it. I own the brand, of course, but you know, it's one of those where I just, like you say, the story, it just hooked me. It just hooked me. The fact that you just wanted to get to the next book, understand his next journey, understand his, you know, next challenge that he had to overcome, because you know he made it, but also you knew there were going to be challenges to sort of get there. And I don't think I ever realized, like you said, Sam, how many times maybe they were at the point of, if this doesn't work, then we're out of business, or, you know, they just didn't make any money for years. And they were obviously trying to bring through, you know, sports stars, and they were going to sort of those other brands. So yeah, a huge, obviously, difference, but yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation. I have to start
definitely
reading listening to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't give up and follow your dreams. How about ending the episode on that? But please do like, share, subscribe if you enjoyed it. Leave a comment. All of that is always appreciated. Neza, Josh, thank you very much for joining.
Thanks, guys.
See you.
You have been listening to Digest and Invest by eToro. For more information, use eToro.com. This podcast is for information and education purposes only and should not be taken as investment advice, a personal recommendation, or an offer of or solicitation to buy or sell any financial instruments. This material has been prepared without taking into account any particular recipient's investment objectives or financial situation, and has not been prepared in accordance with the legal and regulatory requirements to promote independent research. Past performance is not an indication of future results.